Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is KGW-TV Portland and Digital Trends host, Steph Strickland.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me. This is going to be a blast.
It is, because you have such an interesting background. And for the listeners out there, Kelly Guman, who lives in Portland, introduced us. And you have a very interesting background. You're a Macintosh fanatic and a wannabe pilot, and you've traveled covering the Olympics. So you've just done a lot of cool things, and I'm going to ask you about all this. But first, tell me how you first got interested in broadcasting. Did this happen at an early age, or did this something you fell into later?
I fell into it. So I took a... This is actually... It's funny because I never intended to be in front of the camera. That was never the goal. It just sort of worked out that way. Things kept pushing me in that direction. I was in a creative writing class in high school, and my teacher, I'll never forget, took me by the shoulders, marched me into the school newspaper's office and said, and this was the best part, said, here's your next Barbara Walters, who I didn't know she had a background in print, but I went, okay, I'll be the next Barbara Walters. So I joined the school newspaper, moved into editor-in-chief, and then decided I wanted to do print journalism. So I briefly attended the University of Oregon, which was too expensive for me at the time. So I dropped out, worked as a waitress for the summer, saved all my money, and then transferred into a different school. And through a course of internships, discovered the adrenaline-inducing experience that was TV news all of 25 years ago when I did my internship. And I was hooked. The deadlines, the pressure, the rush of excitement, the scramble. I hadn't ever experienced anything like that. And it's just part of my psyche, as if you can't tell from, you know, wanting to fly planes or jump out of them, that it's something that it's something that I really like. And that's how I fell into TV.
One of the things we don't see is the preparation and the timing. And the appearance and the makeup and getting ready.
I hate the makeup. I hate the makeup. I just need you to know, John.
30 seconds, you know, and you've got to get your act together, and then the lights are there, and then you got all of a sudden, bingo, the red light comes on and the camera's rolling and it's showtime.
The thing that I tell people is, I say, you know, the best part about TV news is also the worst. 5 o'clock shows up at the same time every day. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that no matter how bad your day went, no matter how many interviews didn't show up, no matter what phone calls you didn't get back, you had better have a story for the 5 o'clock news, period. That's a lot of pressure. And then you have to produce it and do your best job to deliver it in a way that makes sense to people watching at home, to take a lot of information and simplify it. And then furthermore, to further complicate factors, you got to try to look good and sound good. And that's a part, you know, particularly with makeup and hair, that I've always struggled with. It's just not who I am naturally. So I've somehow figured it out over the years. The upside of that is, if you've had the worst day of work of your life, you're going to go home and tomorrow's a brand new day. Very little carryover from day to day. And that's the upside. So it's a lot of pressure, but you get a clean slate every single day.
I've always wondered how that works. Do you have a team that supports you, and then you sort of behind the scenes have meetings at the desk and review the news stories, and then collectively as a team put together the story and write the script so that it appears on the teleprompter? You're not just reading what everybody else writes, are you?
I'm so glad you asked this, because a lot of people, particularly right now, make assumptions about how the news gets delivered. And every shop is a little bit different. So what I can speak to is what happens at my TV station. Mm-hmm. So they get together in the morning, and it's producers and news managers, and we look at hundreds of opportunities on the table, various stories, press releases, and you have to pick and choose. And that's where the sort of the gatekeeper function of media comes in, where we try to decide,
curation.
Okay, what, you know. Yeah, it's curious, and you have to. You simply can't cover 500 things. But everyone who's submitted a story to you believes in their mind that it's the most important story of the day that needs to be told. So we, as a team, no one works in a vacuum, come up with a list of stories to chase. Then individual reporters will go out, and in some cases these days, they'll also shoot and edit their own stuff now. You know, you used to work with a photographer in this market.
Photojournalist, right?
Yeah, photojournalists, and we still have them, but we also have people on staff who are shooting their own stories, writing them, logging them, editing them, turning them, doing all of it themselves, which is something I'm familiar with. I used to do that. And then I will, as an anchor, so I used to report. I've got tons of war stories about reporting, but now I'm an anchor. So I will sit there and I will look at the introduction that they've written for me. I'll tweak it, ask questions, do whatever, and then sit down and deliver that news. Some people say, if they're sort of in a disparaging way, they want to say, oh, well, you're just a talking head. And nothing could be further from the truth. If you actually come in and watch me work, it's a very easy insult to make. But the reality is I get paid for what happens when nothing's there and nothing's working right. There are no scripts. The story didn't show up. Where are we going next? Mm-hmm. How are you going to keep this from looking like the proverbial train wreck on TV? That's when you earn your keep doing that sort of a job. You keep the newscast flowing and you try to hide the chaos behind the scenes. I'll tell you, John, people come into the studio and they cannot believe at how frenetic it can be at the last minute. Like, that story's not there, go to the next story. And we're scrambling to get into the next position that we need to be in. And we're, flipping through the teleprompter, trying to get it to the right spot, or just completely winging it. And people go, man, that looks really stressful. But when you've done it every day for a number of years, you know how to do it. It's practice. You've practiced it.
I got a sense for that when I had Cal Clark of KUSA Denver Channel 9 on a few weeks ago, and he sort of told that story too. It's very interesting becoming a news anchor. We see TV shows and we see movies about TV anchors, and they're overly dramatic. And
I'm Ron Burgundy.
It makes me want to ask you, were there particular mentors at the station or before that who brought you along? And alternatively, were there obstacles or people who thought, Stephanie can't do this?
Yes, both. So I'll start with the depressing side, and then I'll end on the up note. So initially, when I started in this business, again, I was behind the scenes. I wasn't on air because I didn't look the part. I don't like wearing makeup and I don't like dressing up. Those are two things you have to do to be on TV. And I'm constantly in a struggle with myself over it. So I started as a producer, which I enjoyed, and sort of worked my way into reporting and anchoring. But I'll never forget, I had someone actually in my home market of Portland, Oregon, who's no longer at the TV station in particular in question, not KGW, say to me, you're never going to make it on the air, right? You know that. And I'll never forget that. If there is one thing that brings out the best in me, it is a pointed insult and a slam. I'm built to do this job because you get a lot of insults and you get a lot of slams. And that just motivated me in a way that it lit a fire to, I had to prove that person wrong. And I did. And I'm quite pleased to say I've been at this station for 16 years and have managed to do it on my own terms with the cooperation of KGW and the management, who's been amazing to me. So I'm very blessed. And I've also given them a lot in return over the years. Whatever they asked, I made it happen. So that's an example of some of the stuff that can be a hurdle to you. In terms of a mentor, I don't know that many people would know her, unless for listeners perhaps in the Seattle area would. Susanna Frame at King 5. That woman took the time to drive me in a car for 3.5 hours as a college intern out to a station in Yakima, Washington. She was going over there to visit either family or friends. I don't remember, but she drove me. She had to spend 3.5 hours listening to an idealistic young college student talk her ear off about getting into the business, and introduced me to the news director at a station there, which ultimately hired me straight out of college. And so she's a big reason why I have had success in this, and I'll never forget it. And so to this day, I still try to mentor people. We don't do internships anymore like we used to, but I still try to reach out and talk to people who are interested in the biz so that they really understand what they're getting themselves into, because it's very, very challenging, and that they have good information about where to start and how to be successful if this is a career and a calling for them.
That's a great story. I saw the same thing in graduate school in physics. There are professors who are supporting and they want you to succeed, and they assist you along with your PhD, and they're inspiring and they're fun. And then there's those professors who just, are too arrogant.
Yeah.
and give people endless problems and put everybody else down because of their own ego. It's
a shame.
Always there. in society, and it's something that we always have to overcome.
Yeah.
So there came a time when you became the morning news anchor, and you were setting your alarm for 2:45, and you did that for a while, I read. and then the story merges into your decision to not do that anymore and want to spend more time with your family. That's a fascinating story also. Tell me about that.
Well, and that's the sort of thing, too, where I really enjoy talking to women and also some men. But for women, the mom guilt is what I hear a lot. And it's very prevalent in our industry. And you will not see a lot of female reporters. You'll see anchors, but you won't see a lot of female reporters with children, because that schedule, when you're constantly 2 hours out of town covering a breaking news story at the beach and you don't know when you're going to get home, or you don't know if you're being sent out of town overnight, is not conducive to childcare needs. Anchoring. So when I was originally working and I had my daughter, I waited for a long time and I was very deliberate, and I had just the best managers who were willing to help me try to strike the right balance. Because one of the ways I maintain my enthusiasm and my excitement is because I do feel balanced. When my daughter went to school, I realized very quickly that I was anchoring the 4 and 7 p.m. technology-based show, actually. And I realized that I wouldn't see my daughter at all during the week. So 5 days during the week, I wouldn't see her. That is a very real thing that most working families have to deal with. I don't mean to sound like I am somehow, you know, pulling my weight or doing something that gives me an advantage that I wish every working family could accomplish if they wanted to. I'm lucky in that regard. And I said to my bosses, hey, I'm concerned that this shift isn't going to work for me. At that point, I was willing to walk away from the career and make all the financial and family changes to lose my income. That's the other thing. I've always been we'll drive our cars right into the ground. I don't have a shoe fetish of any sort. You know, I don't have these lavish spending habits other than travel, which we can talk about. And so they said, well, you know, we've been thinking for a while about putting you on mornings. What do you think? And the schedule worked brilliantly. I was off at 7 a.m. in the morning, and I could get home in time to cook breakfast for the family and get my daughter off to school. And I did it for 2.5 years. My second stint on the morning show, I have done every shift, so I can speak to all of them. So this is my second time doing mornings. What was different and what I didn't predict was I was 10 years older than I was the first time I did it. So I'm not as young. And I now have a kid, and I was tired. I was like the newborn tired when you have your first child and you're in that fog. And I was like that all the time. And that's where the things that I thought were going to work so brilliantly in terms of being off early on a Friday. Well, I was asleep by 8 o'clock on a Friday. My husband doesn't get home from work until 6:30. I'm trying to get dinner on the table, you know, get my daughter off to gymnastics or to swimming, and just try to balance it all when I have been up since 2:45 in the morning and I'm not going to bed till 9 o'clock at night. And I realized, after a lot of soul searching, that I was really unhappy, and I was worried about the toll that it was going to take on my health. And there were other factors too, but that in terms of the professional side that I think a lot of people can relate to when you're trying to decide what decisions you can afford to make and how you're going to make this all work, it was huge. And my station said, okay, well, here's, you know, we have a need for this right now. Let's give this a shot. And it dovetailed into doing some freelance work, which I've been passionate about. And their willingness to let me try that is incredible.
Sounds from your bio like the station managers were graceful, supportive, and helped you along with this, and were not combative at all with your desire.
Never,
to do
ever.
This.
Never, ever. And I think it is such a rare thing. And all I can speak to is my experience. Okay. I can't say that everybody has the same experience or whatever, but in my particular case, their willingness to work with me, has been incredible. And I will forever be indebted to them. And as such, was willing to, you know, do the morning shift for months longer than I had originally hoped. When they were like, hey, can you stay through this? Yes. You know, my answer's always been yes, I can do this for you guys, because they've been supportive to me.
Cool. That's a fascinating story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the first part of the show. We need to take a short commercial break. We're going to hear from Kelly Guman herself. And when we come back, I want to ask you about some fun, geeky, technical things in Apple II. So, folks, we'll be right back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm chatting with Steph Strickland. So Kelly, who you just heard talk to us for a bit, told me that you are a huge Apple product and Macintosh fan. It's always fascinating to me to hear about how people fell into the Apple world. How did it happen for you?
It's funny too, because I have so many friends of mine who are diehard Android users, and you know how it goes. The discussions that we get into and the debates that rage are endlessly fascinating and very amusing to me. I fell into it because I love technology, and as an early adopter, I stayed up until midnight to pre-order the very first iPhone, and I got my... You know, it was such a big deal. It was just so exciting and new. And then when it showed up, it was unlike anything anyone had ever seen. And I'll never forget, John, a bunch of my friends on the Canadian snowbird team. They're the jet demonstration team for Canada. We were at an air show down in Salinas, California. And we were on a bus headed somewhere. And everybody, because they didn't have the iPhone yet in Canada, everybody had to play with my iPhone. They all had to look at it and look at the way the... How did the interface work? And look at these little tiles. And this was so, it was so different.
Look,
and
there's
so
a phone
exciting.
Number on the screen. Just touch it. It's
just
magic.
Touch it. It is magic. And it's continued to lead the way in how we interact with technology and has become the benchmark for design across all platforms, as we're seeing big rollouts with, competing phones and computers and everything else. Apple really did set the stage for that. And to this day, we still have our old phones. I still have my first gen iPhone. It's now used as an alarm clock, and that's it. And it's fun to open up and look at how much, the pixels.
It's small. I still have mine in a little tech museum in a cabinet. It's so tiny. It's weird.
Mine still works, and it still holds a charge. I mean, that's the other thing, too. It's a glorified iPod, and I just love it to bits. Yeah.
Hang on to it, because it could be valuable someday.
I know, but I can't give it up. I still have my old Sidekick, which predated the iPhone. If you remember that clunky phone, but it was so fun because the screen flipped open and no one had ever seen anything like that either. So I'm that girl. I am that girl that will get out in front of something if I'm excited about it. And so the iPhone for me resonated. And then after that, it took a while for the rest of the family to get on board, because we are sort of, I say former because we don't do it anymore because we don't have time, but we're former gamers. So we, we loved World of Warcraft. And for that was PC driven. You needed a tower and some fans and some neon lights and a couple of screens and a good headset. And all of that lent itself to the PC world. And it wasn't until very recently that I got my first MacBook a Pro, and I love it, and it drives my husband crazy because I keep it in the kitchen. I won't go work in the office because I just want it sitting. I love it, so it sits out there on my kitchen counter, and that's where I do my work. And he gets a kick out of it. But they're great products. And as I've talked to people, particularly with Digital Trends, where Digital Trends covers everything, and I say, the reality is, if you are an Apple family, it becomes very difficult to introduce an Android product or a PC into that architecture, because the thing that Apple does better than anybody is communicate seamlessly across platforms. So my iPad communicates with my computer, communicates with our phones, and it just works. You should see me set, I have Android phones. You should see me try to set email up on those things. I mean, it's comedy, and I'm no slouch.
May I use that line in an article?
Yes,
Android comedy.
Real. So it's, you really have to, you know, I get that there is a healthy and vigorous debate, and there's room for all platforms out there. There really, truly are. One's not better for the other. But for me, for what I want it to do, we're an Apple family, and we'll continue to be so, even as I've had the opportunity to play with some incredible Android devices.
So you have a MacBook Pro. What are some of your favorite apps, the things that you do with it, like for editing and creating content and things like that?
So hear me out, because it's going to sound like an insult, but it's not. I use iMovie, and I joke with my friends who are big into Final Cut Pro and whatever else. I go, I know, you can tell me it's like editing with crayons. That's my quote-unquote insult.
No, but, it's okay. But it's okay. iMovie is quite capable.
That's the thing. That's the thing. I go, you might think it's editing with crayons, but it is so intuitive. The fact that I can sit down, and because of the TV broadcast side of me, I'm very familiar with the higher-end editing suites that are available out there. And I'm impressed with the ease. I don't need to take 5 classes and practice almost every single day to learn all the tricks and the tools, because it's super intuitive. And when I run into the stumbling block, I can find it in the forum in a second and get an answer to it. There are a few things that drive me nuts about it, but there's a few things that drive me nuts about my car, and I love it too. So I'm a huge iMovie user. And the other little trick, and probably most of your listeners will know this, but if they don't, I'm happy to let you know, there is a wonderful screen capture built into QuickTime that I have used time and time again, where not only can you grab a photo, but you can also grab moving video. You just need to be quiet so your speakers don't, you know, pick up the background noise. But if you're trying just briefly to introduce a little video clip, something well within fair use, but you just don't want to go through the hassle of trying to figure out how to download it and convert it and mess with all that, that screen capture function works brilliantly. So those are the two things that I enjoy. And I still, because of my PC days, still use Microsoft Office and some of those suites of products. But I love my, I'm looking at my Mac right now. It's just sitting there all shiny and happy. So
you're using Skype on your MacBook Pro?
Actually, I'm using Skype on my iPhone. So
really?
Here's why.
You sound great.
This is because you told me, you said one of the issues is with background noise. And if I use my earbuds, then I've got a microphone. And as long as I'm not walking around the house, it's as if I'm using a mic on my Mac. But I don't have one for it yet. So I was concerned that the audio would sound a little bit tinny.
Oh,
so I
great.
Went... Yeah, I went with my phone, and then I just disabled, I put it in airplane mode so I wouldn't get any text messages or calls, and so far so good, knock on wood.
Excellent. Well, that's one of the best sounding recordings I've done in a long time.
Ha-ha!
Very nice. Of course, you're a professional, you know all this stuff.
Yeah, a little bit, sometimes.
Hey, you want to talk about flying?
I would love to talk about flying. That's a passion.
It's one of my interests, too, because I was an Air Force officer, and I took private pilot licenses. And my wife also did that. And so I've got an aviation background. And so anybody who's interested in flying is, I'm interested in, too. And I'm told that you've flown with the Navy's Blue Angels in an F-18.
I have. I've had a chance to fly in almost anything. My ability to weasel my way in a cockpit is just remarkable. I briefly worked at Boeing Defense and Space, and when I was there, it kicked off an interest in military aviation. At the time, Boeing was working on a proposal for the Joint Strike Fighter and the YF-22, and it was very exciting to be in the office and exciting to meet astronauts and exciting to meet the Blue Angels. And then I flew in an AWACS as part of a demonstration, and that sold
the AWACS,
me.
That's like a Boeing 707 KC-135 with the big radar dome on the top, right?
Yes, and what was interesting about it is because that those of us on the flight didn't have security clearance, there was at the time a lot of it covered up with, you know, fancy bed sheets, if you will.
But that's just like an airliner, you know. You know, there's anything exciting in that.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when you're new and you're young, it really did make it. It was one of those sort of seminal moments that made me go, you know what, this is fascinating. And once you have the bug, so then here's what happened: I get my first job in Yakima, Washington, thanks to Susanna Frame at King 5, who drives me out there. And I take a media flight with the Canadian Snowbirds. Do you see where we're going with this?
Yes.
And that was it. I was hooked, and I had made it a point, and I made friends, you know, girlfriends of mine who are doing pyrotechnics, so making stuff blow up on the ground that's supposed to, and doing air show producing, pulling all the resources together to make a show happen. There's this wonderful whole really tight-knit sort of homespun community of aviation enthusiasts in the airshow world, and I got adopted into that. And it's been more than 20 years, and I'm still around doing it. So when I had a chance to fly with the Blue Angels, it was here at KGW in Portland, and it was so thrilling. I have such vivid memories of the feeling of acceleration, the snappy handling of a jet like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to go through chamber training and ejection seat training before you flew?
No, you do if you want to become a more seasoned photographer who's taking routine backseat flights or something like that. You've got to be rated to do that. For a media flight, they structure those media flights so they don't give you anything, well, they do, because some people just can't handle it, you know, period. It's the worst roller coaster you've ever been on. So if you know you're that person who gets a little bit queasy on a boat, that is never going to be an option. I would seriously stay away from it because you'll be sick for a week. But if you know yourself to have a pretty strong inner ear and a decent constitution, and you should ever be so fortunate to get the opportunity, I did because I was media, it's incredible. So the media ride is set up for success. They show you the maneuvers, but they space them apart. So you have a chance to catch your breath and decide if you want to go on to the next one. And I was the last one to fly that day, and the two people before me barfed all over the jet,
and they had to
pull it apart and clean it up. And I'll never forget the guy with the radio station who flew sent me flowers the next day because my flight was delayed
leftovers
by more than an hour. Yeah. I thought that was so, it's my, one of my favorite memories of that day is getting flowers from the radio guy who puked in the jet before me, of all things. It was incredible. It was such a rush, and no one gets to do that. No one gets to say they flew in a Hornet, and to be able to experience that, and just the professionalism.
Was there anything shocking about it? I mean, was the acceleration, even though you knew it was a jet fighter, were you still surprised by the forces and the acceleration and the view and the rapid climb?
All of it. Yes. The split second when they take off, they do a maneuver where they pull, you know, they pitch the nose of that aircraft up, and they go, and it's noisy, and it smells like jet fuel, and it's so exciting, and your adrenaline is going a million miles an hour, because odds are if you're flying in an F-18, you've not done that before. That's your first time.
Do you know how many G's you pulled, Max? Was it five or six?
I do. So I have a fairly, because of my aviation stuff that I do on the side, I've flown in enough aircraft now to know that I can tolerate 5.5 G's pretty well, which is pretty good for someone who doesn't routinely practice it. The guys, you know, and the women who fly, if they go on vacation, you got to sometimes work back up to the heavier G load, and you don't wear a G suit with the Blue Angels. So there's nothing to keep the blood from pooling. You really need to be able to manage that yourself. And so I can do pretty good at 5.5 G's, and at one of the smaller planes like a Sean Tucker who flies just a, you know, not a jet, those G's can actually be more extreme. Like you can pull upwards of 10 G, but it's just for a moment, you know, whereas a jet can sustain heavy G. That's where you start to go gray, and then you take a nap, and then you wake up, but you don't really know you took a nap, and you're like, did I pass out? You know, that's how that happens. When people G-lock, they call it, and they pass out, they come to, and they're not actually aware of what happened. They just take a nap. And that's why I tell my friends, my media friends, like, don't get cocky. The last thing you want to do is roll in there like you think you can hang because the team members who take people for media flights, that's what they do. They know the drill, and people get just the experience of a lifetime, truly.
Have you ever been in a sailplane? I have. One
no.
of those fiberglass beauties with a 15 or 18 meter wing. They can go very fast and pull a lot of G's. You know, a little Cessna, I've been in a Cessna 150, and it's kind of small and awkward and noisy and clunky.
Well, and just easy, like it's an easy plane to fly.
Yeah, but you get into one of these sailplanes, they can go very fast, and they can do loops if they're, you know, aerobatic rated, and they're a fun plane to fly. I highly recommend it.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, he runs a company called Vertigo Air Shows. They're based out of New Mexico, and he has a jet glider. So he has taken a gorgeous glider aircraft and put a jet engine on the back so you don't require a tow plane.
Yep.
And he offered me a ride in that. And now after just hearing you even talk about that, I'm thinking to myself, I need to get that ticket booked and get down
to New Mexico.
So.
All right.
Yeah. I feel very fortunate. It's been a great, you know, it's been a great career. If it wasn't for the media side of this, as I start to dovetail and transition into new projects and new side gigs, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to experience as much life as I did. There's a lot of hard stories to cover. There's a lot of really bad things that people do to each other, and that's a part of it too, but that's not what we're here to talk about today. So today I get to tell you all of the upsides and the, you know, incredible things, and I'm grateful for that opportunity.
Well, I want to transition in the few minutes we have left over to your new career. You're working with Digital Trends, and I saw your CES booth broadcast, part of it.
Ah! Yeah.
And I want to ask you about how, you know, as a career in broadcasting and a news anchor, you're tied up in a very special way with a broad section of news. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the Digital Trends world, and all of a sudden things are very techy and very geeky, and you're exposed, I'm presuming, let me know if I'm wrong, to certain elements of the technical industry that you weren't probably aware of before. How has working with Digital Trends affected your perspectives of the tech industry?
I have been so excited to get back to what I call my roots. We all have that moment where we're covering something and you know this should be my beat. And when I was doing the 7 p.m. show way back in the day, we focused on technology. We had a big focus. And It was startup technology in Portland, Oregon, where I'm from. It was the new app that you really need. It was all of that kind of stuff. And I just enjoyed it immensely. And over time, as my family life dictated career changes that needed to happen, I wasn't able to stay as immersed in technology, but I've always been interested in it. So to be able to drop back into my time with Digital Trends and have a chance to sample, this is why I'm great at a cocktail party. I know a little bit about a lot of things, enough to, you know, sort of carry on the conversation. And to be able to talk to LG about the Internet of Things and how, you know, it's trying to make everything communicate cross-platform, or Ford, the work that they're doing with autonomous cars, or I mean, you name it, just the new phones out there, and what sort of systems are in play to try to create the next best product. Robotics is a passion of mine and always has been, as well as my daughter's. And so to be able to talk to Mayfield Robotics or Furion and just see what folks are trying to create and do out there has been mentally liberating for me, frankly. It's been very exciting.
First you learn, then you engage, and then you tell the story.
There you go. Yeah. And it works in all facets, right?
Yes,
all
it
facets.
Does. That's what we do with the Mac Observer.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
So you're still working at KGW?
I still work at KGW, part-time. When they need me, I fill in. So,
do you think the TV stations in this country will ever go to 4K because they spent so much money converting to high definition? Do you think they're ever going to make that leap, or do you think 4K will stay on the internet, you know, streaming? What do you think?
That's a really good question.
Because I hate spending money. It's very expensive.
Well, let me be your enabler. What I do think is going to happen, and this I'm sort of dancing around the question, but in a way not. I think that you are going to see more and more of a shift. If you go to, for example, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, which is down in Vegas here in just a couple of weeks, April, I think 25th is when it starts. Don't quote me on that, but anyway, it's the end of April. If you go down there for the National Associations of Broadcaster meeting and you look at the technology, people realize in the industry that mobile is where it's at. If you look at how most people access their news, in particular, their news and information, there is a shift that is leaning away from the destination type viewing because people want to be able to stream their content and watch it when they're available as opposed to making sure they're sitting down at 5 p.m. Does the 5 p.m. traditional legacy newscast still exist? Yes. I don't think it's going anywhere. Will they do it in 4K? I hope not. Just for my own sake, like you'll see every pore on my nose. It's already bad enough as it is in high def. And as you know, I don't like makeup, so I refuse to use the expensive high def stuff. But so you've got to have a lot of content for 4K to truly survive as a medium. And if you have ever watched an old show on Netflix that's, you know, in a lower res and you're just like, oh, it's so blurry, it's almost unwatchable.
Because our
TVs are bigger and the ratio is different and the amount of bandwidth that it takes is no longer as daunting as it used to be. You can the pipe is magically bigger, if you will. And so there has to be a lot to happen for 4K to come into play. But as I look at where the industry is headed, at least my industry, I really see I really see it being more mobile and less destination viewer driven, if I had to guess. Ask me in 10 years if I'm right.
I think you are. I think you are. We're almost out of time. So I have one final question for you. Is there anything on the horizon that you want to tell us about? Something, some project that's not so secret?
What's been fun about being home like this and not so tired from the morning show is my ability to sort of unleash the creative side of me. So to have an option to work on my I call it my weirdo art, but I got an offer to actually have a little art show and put some of my work on display, which immediately made me neurotic because that's the one thing that I'm not. I have so much confidence in other aspects of my life, but the art is just like insanely personal, and so I was very weird about it. And I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to confront my fear, and I'm going to go put my art on the walls and let people look at it and try not to run away and scream. And then I'm also working on, believe it or not, a travel style show. And it's funny because the distribution model for that is just going to depend. Again, people are still kind of hung up with like, oh, well, is it going to air on you know, KGW at 5 p.m.? And that's still very viable, but it doesn't always have to be. When you look at Netflix and Amazon and individual content creation out there, there's a world of opportunity that wasn't out there before. You just have to come up with the right formula that makes people want to watch. So stay tuned. We'll see how it works out. I'm Excellent. Open to try anything. Yeah,
Good
thank you.
Good luck with that. Good luck with
thank
that.
You.
Well, and with that, we'll have to bring the show to a close. This has been a fascinating show, very lively, and I appreciate your interest in aviation. That's awesome stuff you've been doing.
Thank you.
Tell the listeners how to contact you if they wish.
I would love it. I would actually love to hear from your listeners. You can find me on any social media channel of your choice, to include Diaspora. Do you remember that? But Steph Strickland. So my last name's not spelled commonly, but if you look for at Steph Strickland, most of it is blue check marked, Instagram, Twitter, that sort of thing. So you'll know it's me, and I'd like to continue the conversation there.
Okay, very cool. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Listeners, I'm really glad you came by, and I hope you enjoyed the show with me and Steph Strickland. Thank you for being a listener, and we'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.